My hair swished on my shoulders like warm water, and I swayed side to side to no particular music. A snail shell lay on the edge of the sidewalk, and my eyes looped into its curlicue.
You know how sometimes you need to hurt?
She said it as if she were selling a new hair product. There are better ways to deal with boredom and claustrophobia than to hurt, I said. You're a smart girl. You know that. I realized her fingers were inside the cuffs of my shirt, touching the ridges of my scars. I didn't stop her. Do you cut, Emma?
I hurt,
she squealed, and twirled out onto the street, spinning flamboyantly, her head back, her arms outstretched like a swan.
I love it,
she screamed. The echo ran down the street where my mother's house stood watch on the corner. Emma spun until she clattered to the pavement, one of her silver bangle bracelets dislodging and rolling down the street drunkenly. I wanted to talk to her about this, be the grown-up, but the ex swooped me up again, and instead, I grabbed her from the street, laughing, her elbow split open and bleeding, and we swung each other in circles on the way to our mother's house. Her face was split in two with her smile, her teeth wet and long, and I realized how entrancing they might be to a killer. Square blocks of shiny bone, the front ones like mosaic tiles you might press into a table.
I'm so happy with you,
Emma laughed, her breath hot and sweetly boozy in my face.
You're like my soulmate.
You're like my sister, I said. Blasphemy? Didn't care.
I love you,
Emma screamed. We were spinning so fast my cheeks were flapping, tickling me. I was laughing like a kid. I have never been happier than right now, I thought. The streetlight was almost rosy, and Emma's long hair was feathering my shoulders. Her high cheekbones jutted out like scoops of butter in her tanned skin. I reached out to touch one, releasing my hand from hers, and the unlinking of our circle caused us to spin wildly to the ground. I felt my ankle bone crack against the curb. Pop. Blood exploding, splattering up my leg. Red bubbles began sprouting onto Emma's chest from her own skid across the pavement. She looked down, looked at me, all glowing blue, husky eyes, ran her fingers across the bloody web on her chest, and shrieked once, long, and then lay her head on my lap, laughing. She swiped a finger across her chest, balancing a flat button of blood on her fingertip, and before I could stop her, rubbed it on my lips. I could taste it, like honeyed tin. She looked up at me and stroked my face, and I let her.
I know you think Adora likes me better, but it's not true, she said.
As if on cue, the porch light of our house way atop the hill switched on.
You want to sleep in my room?
Emma offered, a little quieter. I pictured us in her bed under her polka dot covers, whispering secrets, falling asleep tangled with each other, and then I realized I was imagining me and Marion. She escaped from her hospital bed, asleep next to me. The hot, purring sounds she made as she curled into my belly. I'd have to sneak her back to her room before my mother woke in the morning. High drama in a quiet house, those 5 seconds. Pulling her down the hallway near my mother's room, fearing the door might swing open right then, yet almost hoping. She's not sick, Mama. It's what I planned on yelling if we were ever caught. It's okay. She's out of bed because she's not really sick. I'd forgotten how desperately, positively I believed it. Thanks to the drugs, however, these were only happy recollections now, flipping past my brain like pages of a child's storybook. Marianne took on a bunny-like aura in these memories, a little cottontail dressed as my sister. I was almost feeling her fur when I roused myself to discover Emma's hair brushing up and down my leg.
So, Juana?
she asked.
Not tonight, Emma. I'm dead tired and I want to sleep in my own bed. It was true. The drug was fast and hard and then gone. I felt 10 minutes from sober, and I didn't want Emma around when I hit ground.
Can I sleep over with you, then?
She stood in the streetlight, her jean skirt hanging from her tiny hip bones, her halter askew and ripped, a smear of blood near her lips, hopeful.
Nah, let's just sleep separate. We'll hang out tomorrow.
She said nothing, just turned and ran as fast as she could toward the house, her feet kicking up behind her like a cartoon colt's.
Emma, I called after. Wait, you can stay with me, okay?
I began running after her. Watching her through the drugs in the dark was like trying to track someone while looking backward in a mirror. I failed to realize her bouncing silhouette had turned around, and that she was in fact running to me, at me. She smacked into me headlong, her forehead clanging into my jaw, and we fell again, this time on the sidewalk. My head made a sharp cracking noise as it hit the pavement, my lower teeth lit up in pain. I lay for a second on the ground, Emma's hair folded in my fist, a firefly overhead throbbing in time to my blood. Then Emma began cackling, grabbing her forehead and nudging the spot that was already a dark blue, like the outline of a plum.
Shit! I think you dented my face!
I think you dented the back of my head, I whispered. I sat up and felt woozy. A blurt of blood that had been staunched by the sidewalk now seeped down my neck.
Christ, Emma, you're too rough.
I thought you liked it rough.
She reached a hand and pulled me up, the blood in my head sloshing from back to front. Then she took a tiny gold ring with a pale green peridot from her middle finger and put it on my pinky finger.
Here, I want you to have this.
I shook my head. Whoever gave that to you would want you to keep it.
Adora sorta did. She doesn't care, trust me. She was going to give it to Anne, but... Well, Anne's gone now, so it was just sitting there. It's ugly, right? I used to pretend that she gave it to me, which is unlikely since she hates me.
She doesn't hate you. We began walking toward home, the porch light glaring from the top of the hill.
She doesn't like you,
Emma ventured. No, she doesn't.
Well, she doesn't like me either, just in a different way.
We climbed the stairs, squishing mulberries beneath our feet. The air smelled like icing on a child's cake.
Did she like you more or less after Marion was dead?
She asked, looping her arm into mine. Less.
So, it didn't help.
What?
Her dying didn't help things.
No. Now keep quiet till we get to my room, okay? We padded up the stairs, me holding a hand under the crook of my neck to catch the blood, Emma trailing dangerously behind, pausing to smell a rose in the hall vase, cracking a smile at her reflection in the mirror. Silence as usual from Adora's bedroom, that fan whirring in the dark behind the closed door. I shut the door of my own room behind us, peeled off my rain-drenched sneakers, checked with squares of newly cut grass, wiped smashed mulberry juice off my leg, and began pulling up my shirt before I felt Emma stare. Shirt back down, I pretended to sway into bed, too exhausted to undress. I pulled the covers up and curled away from Emma, mumbling a good night. I heard her drop her clothes to the floor, and in a second the light was off, and she was in bed, curled behind me, naked except for her panties. I wanted to cry at the idea of being able to sleep next to someone without clothes. No worries about what word might slip out from under a sleeve or pant cuff.
Camille?
Her voice quiet and girlish and unsure.
You know how people sometimes say they have to hurt because if they don't, they're so numb they won't feel anything?
Mm-hmm. What if it's the opposite?
Emma whispered.
What if you hurt because it feels so good? Like you have a tingling, like someone left a switch on in your body, and nothing can turn the switch off except hurting. What does that mean?
I pretended to be asleep. I pretended not to feel her fingers tracing vanish over and over on the back of my neck. A dream. Marion, her white nightgown sticky with sweat, a blonde curl pasted across her cheek. She takes my hand and tries to pull me from bed.
It's not safe here, she whispers. It's not safe for you.
I tell her to leave me be.
Chapter 13. It was past 2 when I woke, my stomach coiled in on itself, my jaw aching from grinding my teeth for 5 hours straight. Fucking X. Emma had problems too, I guessed. She'd left a tiny pile of eyelashes on the pillow next to me. I swept them into the palm of my hand and stirred them around. Stiff with mascara, they left a dark blue smudge in the hollow of my palm. I dusted them off into a saucer on my bedside table. Then I went to the bathroom and threw up. I never mind throwing up. When I'd get sick as a child, I remember my mother holding my hair back, her voice soothing. Get all that bad stuff out, sweetheart. Don't stop till it's all out. Turns out I like that retching and weakness and spit. Predictable, I know, but true. I locked my door, stripped off all my clothes, and got back in bed. My head ached from my left ear through my neck and down my spine. My bowels were shifting. I could barely move my mouth for the pain, and my ankle was on fire. And I was still bleeding, I could see from the blooms of red all over my sheets. Emma's side was bloody, too. A light spray where she'd scraped her chest, a darker spot on the pillow itself. My heart was beating too hard, and I couldn't catch my breath. I needed to see if my mother knew what had happened. Had she seen her Emma? Was I in trouble? I felt panicky sick. Something horrible was about to happen. Through my paranoia, I knew what was really going on. My serotonin levels, so jacked up from the drug the night before, had plummeted and left me on the dark side. I told myself this even as I turned my face into the pillow and began sobbing. I had forgotten about those girls. Hell, never really thought about them. Dead Anne and dead Natalie. Worse, I had betrayed Marion, replaced her with Emma, ignored her in my dreams. There would be consequences. I wept in the same retching, cleansing way I'd vomited, until the pillow was wet and my face had ballooned like a drunk's. Then the door handle jiggled. I hushed myself, stroking my cheek, hoping silence would make it go away.
Camille, open up.
My mother, but not angry. Coaxing, nice even. I remained silent. A few more jiggles, a knock. Then silence as she padded away again. Camille, open up. The image of my mother sitting on the edge of my bed, a spoonful of sour-smelling syrup hovering over me. Her medicine always made me feel sicker than before. Weak stomach. Not as bad as Marion's, but still weak. My hands began sweating. Please don't let her come back. I had a flash of Curry, one of his crappy ties swinging wildly over his belly, busting into the room to save me. Carrying me off in his smoky Ford Taurus, Eileen stroking my hair on the way back to Chicago. My mother slipped a key into the lock. I never knew she had a key. She entered the room smugly, her chin tilted high as usual, the key dangling from a long pink ribbon. She wore a powder blue sundress and carried a bottle of rubbing alcohol, a box of tissues,
and a satiny red cosmetic bag.
"Hi, baby," she sighed. "Emma told me about what happened to you too, my poor little ones. She's been purging all morning. I swear, and I know it will sound boastful, but except for our own little outfit, meat is getting completely unreliable these days. Emma said it was probably the chicken?"
"I guess so," I said. I could only run with whatever lie Emma told. It was clear she could maneuver better than I.
"I can't believe you both fainted right on our own stairs while I was sleeping just inside. I hate that idea," Adora said. "Her bruises! You'd have thought she was in a cat fight."
There's no way my mother bought that story. She was an expert in illness and injury, and she would not be taken in by that unless she wanted to be. Now she was going to tend to me, and I was too weak and desperate to ward her off. I began crying again, unable to stop.
"I feel sick, Mama." "I know, baby."
She stripped the sheet off me, flung it down past my toes in one efficient move, and when I instinctively put my hands across myself, she took them and placed them firmly to my side.
"I have to see what's wrong, Camille."
She tilted my jaw from side to side and pulled my lower lip down, like she was inspecting a horse. She raised each of my arms slowly and peered into my armpits, jamming fingers into the hollows, then rubbed my throat to feel for swollen glands. I remembered the drill. She put a hand between my legs, quickly, professionally. It was the best way to feel a temperature, she always said. Then she softly, lightly drew her cool fingers down my legs and jabbed her thumb directly into the open wound of my smashed ankle. Bright green splashes exploded in front of my eyes, and I automatically tucked my legs beneath me, turned on my side. She used the moment to poke at my head until she hit the smashed fruit spot on its crown.
"Just another little bit, Camille, and we'll be all over."
She wet her tissues with alcohol and scrubbed at my ankle until I couldn't see anything for my tears and snot. Then she wrapped it tight with gauze that she cut with tiny clippers from her cosmetic bag. The wound began bleeding through immediately, so the wrapping soon looked like the flag of Japan, pure white with a defiant red circle. Next, she tilted my head down with one hand, and I felt an urgent tugging at my hair. She was cutting it off around the wound. I began to pull away.
"Don't you dare, Camille. I'll cut you. Lie back down and be a good girl."
She pressed a cool hand on my cheek, holding my head in place against the pillow, and snip, 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 sawed through a swath of my hair until I felt a release. An eerie exposure to air that my scalp was unused to. I reached back and felt a prickly patch the size of a half dollar on my head. My mother quickly pulled my hand away, tucked it against my side, and began rubbing alcohol onto my scalp. Again I lost my breath. The pain was so stunning. She rolled me onto my back and ran a wet washcloth over my limbs as if I were bedridden. Her eyes were pink where she'd been pulling at the lashes. Her cheeks had that girlish flush. She plucked up her cosmetic bag and began sifting through various pill boxes and tubes, finding a square of folded tissue from the bottom, wadded and slightly stained. From its center, she produced an electric blue pill.
"One second, sweetheart."
I could hear her hit the steps urgently and knew she was heading down to the kitchen. Then those same quick steps back into my room. She had a glass of milk in her hand.
"Here, Camille, drink this with it."
"What is it?"
"Medicine. It will prevent infection and clear up any bacteria you got from that food."
"What is it?" I asked again. My mother's chest turned a blotchy pink, and her smile began flickering like a candle in a draft. On, off, in the space of a second.
"Camille, I'm your mother, and you're in my house."
glassy pink eyes. I turned away from her and hit another streak of panic. Something bad. Something I'd done.
Camille, open.
Soothing voice, coaxing. Nurse began throbbing near my left armpit. I remember being a kid, rejecting all those tablets and medicines and losing her by doing so. She reminded me of Emma and her ecstasy, wheedling, needing me to take what she was offering. To refuse has so many more consequences than submitting. My skin was on fire from where she'd cleaned me, and it felt like that satisfying heat after a cut. I thought of Emma and how content she'd seemed, wrapped in my mother's arms, fragile and sweaty. I turned back over, let my mother put the pill on my tongue, pour the thick milk into my throat, and kiss me. Within a few minutes I was asleep, the stink of my breath floating into my dreams like a sour fog. My mother came to me in my bedroom and told me I was ill. She lay on top of me and put her mouth on mine. I could feel her breath in my throat. Then she began pecking at me. When she pulled away, she smiled at me and smoothed my hair back. Then she spit my teeth into her hands. Dizzy and hot, I woke up at dusk, drool dried in a crusty line down my neck. Weak. I wrapped a thin robe around myself and began crying again when I remembered the circle at the back of my head. "You're just coming down from the X," I whispered to myself, patting my cheek with my hand. "A bad haircut is not the end of the world. So you wear a ponytail." I shuffled down the hallway, my joints clicking in and out of place, my knuckles swollen for no reason I could think of. Downstairs, my mother was singing. I knocked on Emma's door and heard a whimper of welcome. She sat naked on the floor in front of her huge dollhouse, a thumb in her mouth. The circles beneath her eyes were almost purple, and my mother had pasted bandages to her forehead and chest. Emma had wrapped her favorite doll in tissue paper, dotted all over with red magic marker, and propped her up in bed.
"What did she do to you?"
she said sleepily, half smiling. I turned around so she could see my crop circle. "And she gave me something that made me feel really groggy and sick," I said.
"Blue?"
I nodded.
"Yeah, she likes that one," Emma mumbled. "You fall asleep all hot and drooly, and then she can bring her friends in to look at you."
"She's done this before?" My body went cold under the sweat. I was right. Something horrible was about to happen. She shrugged.
"I don't mind. Sometimes I don't take it. Just pretend. Then we're both happy. I play with my dolls or I read, and when I hear her coming, I pretend to be asleep."
"Emma." I sat down on the floor next to her and stroked her hair. I needed to be gentle. "Does she give you pills and stuff a lot?"
"Only when I'm about to be sick."
"What happens then?"
"Sometimes I get all hot and crazy and she has to give me cold baths. Sometimes I need to throw up. Sometimes I get all shivery and weak and tired and I just want to sleep."
It was happening again. Just like Marion. I could feel the bile in the back of my throat. The tightening. I began weeping again, stood up, sat back down. My stomach was turning. I put my head in my hands. Emma and I were sick, just like Marion. It had to be made that obvious to me before I finally understood. Nearly 20 years too late. I wanted to scream in shame.
"Play dolls with me, Camille."
She either didn't notice or ignored my tears. "I can't, Emma. I have to work. Remember to be asleep when Mama comes back." I dragged on clothes over my aching skin and looked at myself in the mirror. You are thinking crazy thoughts. You are being unreasonable. But I'm not. My mother killed Marion. My mother killed those little girls. I stumbled to the toilet and threw up a stream of salty hot water, the backsplashes from the toilet freckling my cheeks as I kneeled. When my stomach unclenched, I realized I wasn't alone. My mother was standing behind me. "Poor sweetness," she murmured. I started, scrambled away from her on all fours, propped myself against the wall and looked up at her.
"Why are you dressed, darling?" she said. "You can't go anywhere."
"I need to go out. I need to do some work. Fresh air will be good."
"Camille, get back in bed."
Her voice was urgent and shrill. She marched to my bed, pulled down the covers, and patted it.
"Come on, sweetness. You need to be smart about your health."
I stumbled to my feet, grabbed my car keys from the table, and darted past her.
"Cat, Mama. I won't be gone long."
I left Emma upstairs with her sick dolls and slammed down the driveway so quickly I dented my front bumper where the hill abruptly evened out at street level. A fat woman pushing a stroller shook her head at me. I started driving nowhere, trying to assemble my thoughts, running through the faces of people I knew in Wind Gap. I needed someone to tell me plainly I was wrong about Adora, or else that I was right. Someone who knew Adora, who'd had a grown-up's view of my childhood, who'd been here while I was away. I suddenly thought of Jackie O'Neill and her juicy fruit and booze and gossip. Her off-kilter maternal warmth toward me and the comment that now sounded like a warning. "So much has gone wrong." I needed Jackie, rejected by Adora, completely without filter, a woman who'd known my mother her entire life, who very clearly wanted to say something. Jackie's house was only a few minutes away, a modern mansion meant to look like an antebellum plantation home. A scrawny, pale kid was hunched over a riding mower, smoking as he drove back and forth in tight lines. His back was spackled with bumpy, angry zits so big they looked like wounds. Another meth boy. Jackie should cut out the middleman and just give the $20 straight to the dealer. I knew the woman who answered the door. Jerry Schilt, a Calhoun High girl just a year ahead of me. She wore a starchy nurse's dress, same as Gala, and still had the round pink mole on her cheek that I'd always pitied her for. Seeing Jerry, such a pedestrian face from the past, almost made me turn around, get in my car, and ignore all my worries. Someone this ordinary in my world made me question what I was thinking. But I didn't leave.
"Hi, Camille. What can I do for you?"
She seemed utterly uninterested in why I was there, a distinct lack of curiosity that separated her from the other Wind Gap women. She probably didn't have any girlfriends to gossip to. "Hey, Jerry, I didn't know you worked for the O'Neills."
"No reason you would," she said plainly.
Jackie's three sons, born in a row, would all be in their early 20s, 20, 21, 22 maybe. I remembered they were beefy, thick-necked boys who always wore polyester coat shorts and big gold Calhoun High rings with flaming blue jewel centers. They had Jackie's abnormally round eyes and bright white overbites. Jimmy, Jared, and Johnny. I could hear at least two of them now, home from school for the summer, throwing the football in the backyard. From Jerry's aggressively dull look, she must have decided the best way to deal with them was to stay out of their way.
"I'm back here," I began. "I know why you're here," she said, neither accusingly nor with any generosity. Just a statement. I was simply another obstacle in her day.
My mom is friends with Jackie, and I thought, "I know who Jackie's friends are, believe me," Jerry said. She didn't seem inclined to let me in. Instead, she looked me up and down, then out to the car behind me.
"Jackie is friends with a lot of your friends' moms,"
Jerry added. I don't really have many friends around here these days. It was a fact I was proud of, but I said the words in a deliberately disappointed manner. The less she resented me, the quicker I'd get in there, and I felt an urgent need to speak with Jackie before I talked myself out of it. In fact, even when I lived here, I don't really think I had that many friends.
Katie Lacey. Her mom hangs out with all of them.
Good old Katie Lacey, who dragged me to the pity party and turned on me. I could picture her roaring around town in that SUV, her pretty little girls perched in back, perfectly dressed, ready to rule over the other kindergartners. They'd learned from Mom to be particularly cruel to the ugly girls, poor girls, girls who wanted to just be left alone. Too much to ask. Katie Lacey is a girl I'm ashamed of ever being friendly with.
"Yeah, well, you were okay," Jerry said.
Just then I remembered she'd had a horse named Butter. The joke was that, of course, even Jerry's pet was fattening.
"Not really.
I'd never participated in direct acts of cruelty, but I never stopped them either. I always stood on the sidelines like a fretful shadow and pretended to laugh." Jerry continued to stand in the doorway, stretching at the cheap watch around her wrist, tight as a rubber band, clearly lost in her own memories. Bad ones. So why then would she stay in Wind Gap? I'd run across so many of the same faces since I'd been back. Girls I grew up with who never had the energy to leave. It was a town that bred complacency through cable TV and a convenience store. Those who remained here were still just as segregated as before. Petty, pretty girls like Katie Lacey, who now lived predictably in a rehabbed Victorian a few blocks from us, played at the same Woodbury tennis club as Adora, made the same quarterly pilgrimage to St. Louis for shopping. And the ugly, victimized girls like Jerry Schilt were still stuck cleaning up after the pretty ones, heads lowered glumly, waiting for more abuse. They were women not strong enough or smart enough to leave. Women without imagination. So they stayed in Wind Gap and played their teenage lives on an endless loop. And now I was stuck with them, unable to pull myself out.
"Let me tell Jackie you're here."
Jerry went the long way to the back stairs, around through the living room rather than the glass-paneled kitchen that would expose her to Jackie's boys. The room I was ushered into was obscenely white with glaring splashes of color, like a mischievous child had been finger-painting. Red throw pillows, yellow and blue curtains, a glowing green vase packed with ceramic red flowers. A ludicrous, leering black-and-white photo of Jackie, hair overblown, talons curled coyly beneath her chin, hung over the mantelpiece. She was like an over-groomed lapdog. Even in my sickened state, I laughed.
"Darling Camille!"
Jackie crossed the room with arms outstretched. She was wearing a satin house robe and diamond earrings like blocks.
"You've come to visit. You look horrible, sweetheart. Jerry, get us some Bloody Marys, stat."
She howled literally at me, then at Jerry. I guess it was a laugh. Jerry lingered in the doorway until Jackie clapped at her.
"I'm serious, Jerry. Remember to salt the rim this time."
She turned back to me.
"So hard to get good help these days,"
she muttered earnestly. Unaware no one really says that who's not on TV. I'm sure Jackie watched TV non-stop, drink in one hand, remote control in the other, curtains pulled as morning talk shows yielded to soaps, glided into court TV, moved on to reruns, sitcoms, crime dramas, and late-night movies about women who were raped, stalked, betrayed, or killed. Jerry brought in the bloodies on a tray, along with containers of celery, pickles, and olives, and, as instructed, closed the drapes, and left. Jackie and I sat in the dim light in the freezing air-conditioned white room and stared at each other a few seconds. Then Jackie swooped down and pulled out the drawer of the coffee table. It held 3 bottles of nail polish, a ratty Bible, and more than 6 orange prescription bottles. I thought of Curry and his clipped rose thorns.
Painkiller? I got some good ones.
I should probably keep some of my wits about me, I said, not quite sure if she was serious.
Looks like you could almost start your own store there. Oh, sure. I'm terribly lucky.
I could smell her anger mixed with tomato juice.
Oxycontin, Percocet, Percodan, whatever new pill my latest doctor has stock in. But I gotta admit, they're fun.
She poured a few round white tablets into her hand and shot them back, smiled at me. What do you have? I asked, almost afraid of the answer.
That's the best part, sweetie. No one fucking knows. Lupus says one, arthritis says another, some sort of autoimmune syndrome says a third, it's all in my head says the fourth and fifth.
What do you think?
What do I think? She asked and rolled her eyes. I think as long as they keep the meds coming, I probably don't care all that much.
She laughed again.
They're really fun.
Whether she was putting on a brave face or was really addicted, I couldn't tell.
I'm sort of surprised Adora hasn't gotten herself on the sick track, she leered. Figured once I did, she'd have to up the stakes, right? She wouldn't have silly old lupus, though. She'd find a way to get, I don't know, brain cancer, right?
She took another sip of the Bloody Mary, got a slash of red and salt across her upper lip, which made her look swollen. That second swallow calmed her, and just as she had at Natalie's funeral, she stared at me like she was trying to memorize my face.
Good God, it's so weird to see you grown up, she said, patting my knee. Why are you here, sweetheart?
Is everything okay at home?
Probably not.
Is it your mama? No, nothing like that. I hated being so obvious.
Oh.
She looked dismayed, a hand fluttering to her robe like something out of a black and white movie. I'd played her wrong, forgot that down here it was encouraged to openly crave gossip. I mean, I'm sorry, I wasn't being frank just now. I do want to talk about my mother. Jackie immediately cheered.
Can't quite figure her out, huh? Angel or devil or both, right?
Jackie placed a green satin pillow under her tiny rump and aimed her feet onto my lap.
Sweet pea, will you just rub a little? They're clean.
From under the sofa, she pulled a bag of mini candy bars, the kind you give out at Halloween, and placed them on her belly.
Lord, I'm gonna have to get rid of these later, but they'll taste good going down.
I took advantage of this happy moment. Was my mother always the way she is now? I cringed at the awkwardness of the question, but Jackie cackled once, like a witch.
What's that, sweet pea? Beautiful, charming, beloved, evil?
She wiggled her toes as she unwrapped a chocolate.
Rub.
I began kneading her cold feet, the soles rough like a turtle shell.
Adora. Well, damn. Adora was rich and beautiful, and her crazy parents ran the town. They brought that damn hog farm to Wind Gap, gave us hundreds of jobs. There was a walnut plant then, too. They called the shots. Everyone bootlicked the Preakers.
What was life for her like at home?
Adora was overly mothered. Never saw your Grandma Joya smile at her or touch her in a loving way, but she couldn't keep her hands off her. Always fixing the hair, tugging at clothes, and, oh, she did this thing. Instead of licking her thumb and rubbing out a smudge, she'd lick Adora. Just grab her head and lick it. When Adora peeled from a sunburn? We all did back then. Not as smart about SPF as your generation. Joy would sit next to your mama, strip off her shirt, and peel the skin off in long strips. Joy, I love that. Jackie, I am not lying. Having to watch your friend strip naked in front of you and groomed? Needless to say, your mama was sick all the time. She was always having tubes and needles and such stuck in her. What was she sick with? Little bit of everything. A lot of it just the stress of living with Joya. Those long, unpainted fingernails, like a man's. And long hair she let go silver down her back. Where was my grandfather in all this? Don't know. Don't even remember his name. Herbert? Herman? He was never around, and when he was just quiet and away. You know the type. Like Alan. She popped another chocolate and wiggled her toes in my hands. You know, having you should have ruined your mother. Her tone was reproachful, as if I'd failed a simple chore. Any other girl got knocked up before marriage here in Wind Gap way back when, it'd be all over for her. Jackie continued, but your mother always had a way of making people baby her. People, not just boys, but the girls, their mothers, the teachers. Why is that? Sweet Camille, a beautiful girl can get away with anything if she plays nice. You certainly must know that. Think of all the things boys have done for you over the years they never would have done if you hadn't had that face. And if the boys are nice, the girls are nice. Adora played that pregnancy beautifully. Proud but a little broken and very secretive. Your daddy came for that fateful visit, and then they never saw each other again. Your mama never spoke about it. You were all hers from the beginning. That's what killed Joya. Her daughter finally had something in her that Joya couldn't get at. Did my mother stop being sick once Joya was gone? She did okay for a while, Jackie said over her glass. But wasn't that long before Marion came along, and she didn't really have time to be sick then. Was my mother... I could feel a sob welling up in my throat, so I swallowed it with my watered-down vodka. Was my mother... a nice person? Jackie cackled again, popped a chocolate, the nougat sticking to her teeth. That's what you're after? Whether she was nice? She paused. What do you think? She added, mocking me. Jackie dug into her drawer again, unscrewed three pill bottles, took a tablet from each, and arranged them from largest to smallest on the back of her left hand. I don't know. I've never been close with her. But you've been close to her. Don't play games with me, Camille. That exhausts me. If you thought your mama was a nice person, you wouldn't be over here with her best friend asking whether she's nice. Jackie took each pill, largest to smallest, smashed it into a chocolate, and swallowed it. Wrappers littered her chest. The smear of red still covered her lip, and a thick, fudgy coating clung to her teeth. Her feet had begun to sweat in my hands. I'm sorry. You're right, I said. Just, do you think she's... sick? Jackie stopped her chewing, put her hand on mine, and took a sigh of a breath. Let me say it aloud, because I've been thinking it too long, and thoughts can be a little tricky for me. They zip away from you, you know. Like trying to catch fish with your hands. She leaned up and squeezed my arm. Adora devours you, and if you don't let her, it'll be even worse for you. Look at what's happening to Amma. Look at what happened to Marion. Yes. Just below my left breast, bundle began tingling. So you think... I prompted. Say it.
I think she's sick, and I think what she has is contagious. Jackie whispered, her shaky hands making the ice in her glass chime. And I think it's time for you to go, sweet pea. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to overstay my welcome. I mean, leave Windgap. It's not safe for you here. Less than a minute later, I closed the door on Jackie as she stared at the photo of herself, leering back from the mantelpiece. Chapter 14. I nearly tumbled down Jackie's steps. My legs were so wobbly. Behind my back, I could hear her boys chanting the Calhoun football rally. I drove around the corner, parked under a copse of mulberry trees, and rested my head against the wheel. Had my mother truly been sick? And Marion? Emma and me? Sometimes I think illness sits inside every woman, waiting for the right moment to bloom. I have known so many sick women all my life. Women with chronic pain, with ever-gestating diseases. Women with conditions. Men, sure, they have bone snaps, they have backaches, they have a surgery or two, yank out a tonsil, insert a shiny plastic hip. Women get consumed. Not surprising, considering the sheer amount of traffic a woman's body experiences. Tampons and speculums, cocks, fingers, vibrators, and more, between the legs, from behind, in the mouth. Men love to put things inside women, don't they? Cucumbers and bananas and bottles, a string of pearls, a magic marker, a fist. Once a guy wanted to wedge a walkie-talkie inside of me. I declined. Sick and sicker and sickest. What was real and what was fake? Was Emma really sick and needing my mother's medicine? Or was the medicine what was making Emma sick? Did her blue pill make me vomit, or did it keep me from getting more ill than I'd have been without it? Would Marion be dead if she hadn't had Adora for a mother? I knew I should call Richard, but couldn't think of anything to tell him. I'm scared. I'm vindicated. I want to die. I drove back past my mother's house, then east out toward the hog farm, and pulled up to Gila's, that comforting, windowless block of a bar where anyone who recognized the boss's daughter would wisely leave her to her thoughts. The place stank of pig blood and urine. Even the popcorn in bowls along the bar smelled of flesh. A couple of men in baseball caps and leather jackets, handlebar mustaches and scowls, looked up, then back down into their beers. The bartender poured me my bourbon without a word. A Carole King song droned from the speakers. On my second round, the bartender motioned behind me and asked, "You looking for him?" John Keane sat slumped over a drink in the bar's only booth, picking at the splintered edge of the table. His white skin was mottled pink with liquor, and from his wet lips and the way he smacked his tongue, I guessed he'd vomited once already. I grabbed my drink and sat across from him, said nothing. He smiled at me, reached his hand to mine across the table. "Hi, Camille. How are you doing? You look so nice and clean." He looked around. It's so dirty here." "I'm doing okay, I guess, John. You okay?"
"Oh, sure, I'm great. My sister's murdered. I'm about to be arrested, and my girlfriend, who's stuck to me like glue since I moved to this rotten town, is starting to realize I'm not the prize anymore. Not that I care that much. She's nice, but not..."
"Not surprising?" I offered.
"Yeah. Yeah. I was about to break up with her before Natalie. Now I can't."
Such a move would be dissected by the whole town. Richard, too. What does it mean? How does it prove his guilt?
I will not go back to my parents' house, he muttered. I will go to the fucking woods and kill myself before I go back to all of Natalie's things staring at me.
I don't blame you. He picked up the salt shaker, began twirling it around the table.
You're the only person who understands, I think, he said. What it's like to lose a sister and be expected to just deal, just move on. Have you gotten over it?
He said the words so bitterly I expected his tongue to turn yellow. You'll never get over it, I said. It infects you.
It ruined me.
It felt good to say it out loud.
Why does everyone think it's so strange that I should mourn Natalie?
John toppled the shaker, and it clattered to the floor. The bartender sent over a disgruntled look. I picked it up, set it on my side of the table, threw a pinch of salt over my shoulder for both of us. I guess when you're young, people expect you to accept things more easily, I said.
And you're a guy.
Guys don't have soft feelings. He snorted.
My parents got me this book on dealing with death, male and mourning. It said that sometimes you need to drop out to just deny. That denial can be good for men. So I tried to take an hour and pretend like I didn't care. And for a little bit, I really didn't. I sat in my room at Meredith's and I thought about bullshit. I just stared out the window at this little square of blue sky and kept saying, it's okay, it's okay, it's okay. Like I was a kid again. And when I was done, I knew for sure nothing would ever be okay again. Even if they caught who did it, it wouldn't be okay. I don't know why everyone keeps saying we'll feel better once someone's arrested. Now it looks like the someone is going to be arrested is me.
He laughed in a grunt and shook his head.
It's just fucking insane.
And then abruptly,
you want another drink? Will you have another drink with me?
He was smashed, swaying heavily, but I would never steer a fellow sufferer from the relief of a blackout. Sometimes that's the most logical route. I've always believed clear-eyed sobriety was for the harder-hearted. I had a shot at the bar to catch up, then came back with two bourbons, mine a double. It's like they picked the two girls in Wind Gap who had minds of their own and killed them off, John said. He took a sip of bourbon.
Do you think your sister and my sister would have been friends?
In that imaginary place where they were both alive, where Marion had never aged. No, I said, and laughed suddenly. He laughed, too.
So, your dead sister is too good for my dead sister? He blurted.
We both laughed again, and then quickly soured and turned back to our drinks. I was already feeling dazed.
I didn't kill Natalie, he whispered.
I know. He picked up my hand, wrapped it around his. Her fingernails were painted. When they found her, someone painted her fingernails, he mumbled. Maybe she did.
Natalie hated that kind of thing, barely even allowed a brush through her hair.
Silence for several minutes. Carole King had given way to Carly Simon. Feminine folksy voices in a bar for slaughterers.
You're so beautiful, John said. So are you.
John fumbled with his keys in the parking lot, handed them to me easily when I told him he was too drunk to drive. Not that I was much better. I steered him blurrily back to Meredith's house, but he just shook his head when we got close, asked if I'd drive him to the motel outside town lines. Same one I'd stayed at on my way down here. A little refuge where one could prepare for Wind Gap and its weight. We drove with the windows down, warm night air blowing in, pasting John's t-shirt to his chest, my long sleeves flapping in the wind. Aside from his thick head of hair, he was so utterly bare. Even his arms sprouted only a light down. He seemed almost naked, in need of cover. I paid for the room, number 9, because John had no credit cards, and opened the door for him, sat him on the bed, got him a glass of lukewarm water in a plastic cup. He just looked at his feet and refused to take it. "John, you need to drink some water." He drained the cup in a gulp and let it roll off the side of the bed, grabbed my hand. I tried to pull away, more instinct than anything, but he squeezed harder. "I saw this the other day, too," he said, his finger tracing part of the D in Wretched, just tucked under my left shirt sleeve. He reached his other hand up and stroked my face. "Can I look?" "No." I tried again to pull away. "Let me see, Camille." He held on. "No, John. No one sees." "I do." He rolled my sleeve up, squinted his eyes, trying to understand the lines in my skin. I don't know why I let him. He had a searching, sweet look on his face. I was weak from the day, and I was so damn tired of hiding. More than a decade devoted to concealment, never an interaction, a friend, a source, the checkout girl at the supermarket, in which I wasn't distracted, anticipating which scar was going to reveal itself. Let John look. Please let him look. I didn't need to hide from someone courting oblivion as ardently as I was. He rolled up the other sleeve, and there sat my exposed arms, so naked they made me breathless. "No one's seen this?" I shook my head. "How long have you done this, Camille?" "A long time." He stared at my arms, pushed the sleeves up farther, kissed me in the middle of weary. "This is how I feel," he said, running his fingers over the scars until I got a chill of goosebumps. "Let me see it all." He pulled my shirt over my head as I sat like an obedient child, eased off my shoes and socks, pulled down my slacks. In my bra and panties, I shivered in the frosty room, the air conditioner blasting a chill over me. John pulled back the covers, motioned for me to climb in, and I did, feeling feverish and frozen at once. He held up my arms, my legs, turned me on my back. He read me, said the words out loud, angry and nonsensical both. "Oven, queasy, castle." He took off his own clothes, as if he sensed an unevenness, threw them in a ball on the floor, and read more. "Bun, spiteful, tangle, brush." He unhooked my bra in front with a quick flick of his fingers, peeled it off me. "Blossom, dosage, bottle, salt." He was hard. He put his mouth on my nipples, the first time since I began cutting in earnest that I'd allowed a man to do that. 14 years. His hands ran all over me, and I let them. My back, my breasts, my thighs, my shoulders, his tongue in my mouth, down my neck, over my nipples, between my legs, then back to my mouth. Tasting myself on him, the words stayed quiet. I felt exorcised. I guided him into me and came fast and hard, and then again. I could feel his tears on my shoulders while he shuddered inside me. We fell asleep, twisted around each other, a leg jutting out here, an arm behind a head there, and a single word hummed once. Omen. Good or bad, I didn't know. At the time, I chose to think good. Foolish girl. In the early morning, Dawn made the tree branches glow like hundreds of tiny hands outside the bedroom window. I walked naked to the sink to refill our cup of water,